This is the Mindset Toolkit Podcast. The continual pursuit of improvement.
How's everybody going? My name is Selman, host of the Mindset Toolkit Podcast, and on this episode I'll be talking about the book Hard Things About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. This will be the second episode in a three-part series summarizing the book, where I'll be distilling down the concepts and main points that Horowitz raises in this great book. Thanks for joining me. The title of Chapter 5 is Take Care of the People, Products, and the Profits, in that order. The chapter really highlights how a leader should prioritize their resources. You definitely want to focus on the people above all else. And when you're looking at hiring people, you want to hire for strengths and not for lack of weakness. And I think this goes for a lot of other things in life too, where people generally look for what they don't want. They don't necessarily go out and look for what they want, whether that be in a business partner or a relationship partner. People generally will overlook the strengths that people have and focus on what they don't have, which is never a good thing. And the reason Horowitz stresses looking after people first is because when you don't look after the people who work for you, you'll lose any extra effort, ambition, and intelligence that they may have to offer, especially when dealing with staff who feel they are underappreciated in the office. Customers are served by your staff who work for you. So if your staff aren't happy, the customers will definitely notice, and they won't be treated as well as they would be if you valued your own staff. You want to create a good place to work. You want to meet people on a regular basis, one-on-one meetings basically, because what that does, it gives management a finger on the pulse of their workers. It also creates camaraderie between the leaders and the workers. The CEO comes to work to make sure that the company is a great place to work, so that people who work there enjoy coming in and that they have a job. That's really their main priority. One of the differences between a good and a bad company, or a good and bad working environment, is that a good place will focus on the work and to getting things done, and by doing that, the staff can expect to have good things happen to the company and also to them. It's efficient, effective, and fulfilling. They're not worried about the politics, and that's where good companies stand out. Being a good company doesn't really matter when things are going well. It makes much more difference how you act when times are bad, and that's really back to the ship analogy. A ship can sail on calm seas all day, but to test it out, you really need to put it in the rough storm. And the only thing that keeps people at a company when times are bad is that they like their job. And most companies are going to go through hard times, and you want your great employees and staff to stay with you. And the groundwork for this is that startups should always train their employees. If McDonald's does it and all their staff are doing it flipping burgers, then why shouldn't you? And training really is the boss's job. It's the most important leverage that a company has, especially in the IT field. By providing training, it sets expectations and sets up performance management. And it's investing in training employees. You want functional training, so expectations, historical nuances of your product, and management training. It trains executives on how to coach, lead, and review. It's a good way to bring the talent out of people that necessarily they might not have shown, because it shows that you're caring about your employees. And if you've put training on the back seat because it costs so much, imagine what it's going to cost you by having people that work for you that are not trained. And two ways to improve in productivity of staff is either you motivate them or you provide them with training. Everyone will have a unique and different idea of what their job entails, since everyone's work history is different. But by having a training program in place for your company, it reduces confusion and puts everybody on the same page. The next couple of points talks about what Horowitz believes make good product managers. I think we can extrapolate on this and see some traits that good product managers have that you can apply to your own life and to your own situations. So what I'll do next is highlight the points that Horowitz says a good product managers have, and then just kind of expand on those to a more general way or a different way to think of it that isn't necessarily IT management related. Number one is they don't get all the time sucked up by micromanaging. They manage the team. So you can use this by knowing that you can't control everything, nor should you try to understand what's in your control and what's out of your control. Secondly, they crisply define the product. They define the what, not the how. I think that's great by setting up goals for yourself, very specific goals, so that you know where you want to go. The road that gets you there might not be the exact same road, because you're going to have unexpected mishaps along the way. So as long as you have the end goal in mind, you'll you'll get there very well. Next, they communicate in writing and verbally. They don't give information informally, yet they gather information informally. I think this is great for networking, gathering information about products you may want to start investing in, investments you might have. Talking to people, networking is great for this. You don't need to be like, good afternoon, I would like to get some information from you regarding the company you work for. You definitely want to be more informal. You want to loosen the guard so that people freely share information with you. Next of all, they create FAQs, product papers, collateral presentations that can be leveraged by everyone else in the company. So you want to share within your team of your network of people and mentors and your tribe so that everyone is on the same page and everyone can leverage your information. And if everyone does that, everybody grows exponentially, because you don't just have one brain that's working on something. You have five brains that are sharing distilled down ideas with each other. Next of all, they anticipate serious product flaws. And this is just identifying problems that might arise in the future. You want to take written positions on important issues. So you want to stand your ground where it matters. Know what your moral compass is. And if it doesn't follow that, don't do it. They focus the team on revenue and customers. So just staying focused on your goals. Remind yourself and your team what's important to you. They define good products that can be executed with a strong effort. So they define something that can be made and something that can be made well. And it's possible to be made well. You don't want to figure out how to send a paper airplane to the moon, because that's just not feasible. They think in terms of delivering superior value to the marketplace during product planning and achieving market share and revenue goals during the go-to-market phase. So they're great in their planning and superior in their execution. And when it's planning, they maintain their goals and improve upon their goals at every phase. You want to decompose problems. That one's pretty self-explanatory. Think about the story they want written by the press. So you want to think about the legacy that you're leaving, the story that people know about you when you're not in the room. You want your reputation. You want to think about how you're perceived by everybody else. At the same time, you don't want that to dictate your actions. It's a weird dichotomy, but you need to stay true to yourself, but also understand that people are going to be judging you. They ask the press questions. I think just generally, you just always want to be asking more than you're talking. You assume members of the press are really smart, so always assume everyone around you is smart and understands where you're coming from. They want to err on the side of clarity. That one's pretty generally relatable. They define their job and their success. I think that comes back to the goal setting and being clear on that. And then they send status reports on time because they're disciplined. And this one just comes to remembering to do the hard work whenever it counts, even if you don't want to do that hard work. Being a great manager is about being able to manage people that are better at the job than you are. Be careful about how you set your short-term goals. There can be unintended consequences for setting up specific targets. You can pit short-term goals against long-term objectives. So you want to help combat this by thinking about how you're achieving your short-term goals. So let's say, for example, you want to lose weight. You want to lose 10 pounds, and your short-term solution is to not eat for 5 days. Now, that might achieve the 10-pound weight loss in a week, but in the long term, how is your body being treated? It's in the long term, you're shooting yourself in the foot. So always think about how you're achieving short-term goals, because that will help highlight any inconsistencies between the long and the short term. I mean, there's always going to be a trade-off with everything that you do. You can have a short-term speedy solution that will have long-term consequences you'll have to answer for. And you have to know that this is going to happen. You have to manage that. What he calls management debt is any short-term speedy solution is going to come at a cost in the future. The next couple of points talk about CEO behavior, and I think, again, we can generalize these points and bring them to their own lives. So a CEO alone sets the tone and culture of the company. Monkey see, monkey do. So lead by example in whatever it is that you do. And clarity about culture is what's important. Culture will never be the same from a 10-person team to a 10,000-person team. He also talks about having smart people that are bad for the team. Intelligence isn't the only important quality. You want to be effective in a company, and that means you work hard, you're reliable, and you're an excellent team member. There are three main types of smart employees who are problematic for a company. The first one's known as the heretic, where they look for fault in everything the company does. And it takes a really smart person to cause damage because they can actually see the faults. The problem with this is that they don't offer to fix them. And it might even be worse because now they have an agenda to destroy the company and they see all the faults. Secondly is the flake. No matter how intelligent an employee is, it doesn't count if they aren't reliable. And finally is the jerk. They're so belligerent in their communication style that it can stifle communication across the team, leading to a complete breakdown. This only works if the person is incredibly smart, because otherwise no one will care what they have to say. Now, you can attach this to your own life by aiming to not be one of these three people, not just in work, but in your own everyday life, because no one wants to just hear about problems without solutions. No one wants to have someone that is unreliable, and no one wants to deal with a jerk. So, I don't think this just applies to people in the workplace. And finally, I'll address what he talks about is building a good company culture. Now, even if you're not a leader in a company, you too can have an impact on the world. As Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. So this is why a company culture matters. A new product must be 10 times better than the current best thing, and this is to switch customers over, because being marginally better won't convince people to switch in a large enough volume. Secondly, speed kills. You need to beat the competition very, very quickly. And finally, culture doesn't make a company if the product or business fails. So here are three reasons why you need to have a good company culture. It matters because it helps you achieve the goals. As a company grows, culture can help you preserve your key values, make your company a better place to work, and help it perform better in the future. And after you and your people go through an inhuman amount of work it takes to build a successful company, it will be an epic tragedy if your company has a culture that means you don't even want to work there. So how do you go about creating and designing a good company culture? And what Horowitz identifies is that most successful companies have a cult-like culture. He doesn't want to mistake this by, don't be wacky just for the sake of being wacky, but you want to be proactive enough in order to change how people operate on a daily basis, because shock is a great way to implement change, and you want something to change that is trivial but has far-reaching outcomes for a very long time. An example of this is creating keystone habits in your life. So by creating one strong habit, it affects a whole bunch of other ways that you live your life. So for example, you want to get healthy. So instead of watching TV at night, you go for a walk or you go to the gym, you lift some weights. Over time, you're going to start eating better because you want to see better results in the gym. Then you're going to start sleeping better. Then you're going to start improving other aspects of your life. You might start reading every day to learn more, and that's going to flow into you executing on ideas that you might come across in these books. So by changing one thing, you'll start changing other things in your life, not necessarily by design, but because you're slowly changing over time for the better. So that's all I have for today. So go out and find The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. It's a very interesting read. Tune in next week for part 3, the third and final part of my summary of The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. This has been Selwyn on the Mindset Toolkit podcast. Thanks for your time. Remember, what you learned today will serve you tomorrow. So go out and go get it.